Does hydro fit the bill? Also, what's the value of a view, the value of new jobs, and the impact of large-scale projects on local property taxes? Then there's the question of need. How much power do New Hampshire and New England need today and for the future? And how much would adding hydro to the mix increase supply and reduce costs? Northern Pass also brings up issues of authority. Who should have the right to say yes or no to the project? The federal government? The state of New Hampshire? What about the towns along the ultimate route? Today in The Exchange, what's next for Northern Pass? We'll find out where this venture is at this point in the process, including some recent North Country land purchases and a new critique of the project's ultimate economic payoff, given new realities of today's energy markets. Let's hear from you, too. What do you think is really at stake with this project? What are some of the bigger questions at hand here? And what questions do you think are not being asked enough? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email. Keep it short, please. The Exchange address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests for the hour both join us from the North Country. We have with us Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat, and the Berlin Reporter. And Edith, thanks for your time and for being with us.
It's nice to be here.
Also with us on the line, Barbara Tatro, reporter for the Berlin Daily Sun newspaper. And Barbara, welcome back and thanks for your time this morning.
Pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be here.
Well, and Barbara, to you first, you did a comprehensive piece recently on this for New Hampshire Business Review, looking at some of the issues at hand that I just mentioned that have come up with this project. After looking at the history of this, Barbara, and where it is now, what stands out for you from doing this, again, in-depth report?
Well, it stands out for me that this is a very complicated, complex project that has elicited some of the most emotional responses of any project that I've seen here in the North Country in my almost 40 years of reporting. And, you know, the pros in both sides are locked into positions. There doesn't seem to be, at this point in time, any discussion of compromises. You know, on the pros, we have arguments that this is a renewable energy source from a friendly foreign country, that it will reduce energy prices, theoretically anyway, that it will bring some property value to some towns that could use some and create, at least during construction, some jobs. On the con, the negative side, you know, we have arguments that it's not as environmentally friendly as it's been proposed, that it will, that hydro, large-scale hydropower is not as benign as people would have us believe, that the line itself will fragment environmentally sensitive land areas, and that it will compete with smaller local hydro renewable energy projects. But clearly, the most disputed part of it is the line and the 40 miles of new line that it will require in the North Country through some pretty amazing land, some pretty good territory, and the fact that many people up here feel that they are not really being given an opportunity to weigh in on this plan. You know, a lot of the petitions that we've seen from town meetings are requesting that where's the local control? It's a very complicated project, and sorting out, you know, the benefits and the negative is depends a lot on the perspective of the person analyzing it.
You know, Edith Tucker, Barbara said in her almost 40 years of reporting in the North Country, this is the most emotional response she's seen to any particular project. What about you?
Well, although I am older than Barbara, I have not been a reporter as long as she has been. And so in my own family, we've had eminent domain issues with the Portland Pipeline when it was built through Shelburne in 1940. I lived through and was most unhappy with the resolution of the placement of Route 2 through the town of Randolph, where I live, that split the town in ways that seem amazing to look back on. But when I try to talk about it, my heart races faster. So land use issues and outside people coming in and deciding what's going to happen, it's just very, very hard to take. and it is very emotional. Above ground, someone has pointed out, is much more emotional than things that are below ground, like a pipeline. And I think it's probably comparable to something that Barbara has written about in the last year or so, and that is the proposed Skyline Drive that would have gone on the Gulf side on the Presidential Range. Is that in the 30s? And that was a very emotional topic. Pontook Dam, another project that Barbara is an expert on, another very, very emotional one. But these things, when they come and are proposed, they're lasting. They're not going to go away. It's not like cutting down some trees, as they say up here. They'll grow back. But a hydro line, a big line with towers, it'll be there for a long, long time. So it is very difficult.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We want your thoughts and questions about the Northern Pass project, some of the big issues at hand, and whether in the end you think this project will go forward or will it be stopped by the local opposition that our guests have described. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email, keep them short, is exchange@nhpr.org. And so, Edith, just remind us real quickly, where is this project now in terms of getting the land needed to put it in place?
Well, the legislature did pass a law that made it clear that what rulings that their eminent domain could not be used for such a project and now embodied specifically in law about a transmission line. That was a big push of the opponents. That pushed public service into having to buy land from willing sellers. No chance of eminent domain. That, however, has turned out to be a bidding war and has apparently pitted neighbor against neighbor in the section of land above Groveton where there is no right-of-way existing. And most recently, Paula Tracy, I think it was, in the Union Leader, had a piece about a key parcel owned by a man from North Carolina named Edwards, for which $2,125,000 was paid for 308 acres. And apparently that is considered a key parcel.
$2 million, that's a lot of money.
It's a very similar amount of money to what Public Service had offered for what really was what they needed, 24 acres on the Balsams property. So we know, we have known, that they have that kind of capability to pay those kinds of money for this project. Eminent domain, of course, there are appraisals. And so there's a cap to what people can get when eminent domain is actually invoked. So people tend to sell before that happens, thinking they'll get more money.
Right.
But now it's an open market. The eminent domain is a double-edged sword, and now it's opened up the possibility of large dollars coming to bear. Whether this is actually now a route or not, I don't know. I think only the people who work for public service would know that.
Well, and your point raises a question that I had, so I'll throw it to you, Barbara. You know, some of the people, as Edith points out, who have sold to Northern Pass are out-of-state landowners, or at least people from southern New Hampshire who maybe no longer head up north on a regular basis and decided to sell. So what's the feeling about these not-from-around-here folks who have taken the cash from Northern Pass, Barbara?
Well, I think that it's easier for them to take the cash because they don't have to face their neighbors who oppose it. But I think it's very tough for the people who are who live along line, the proposed line, and who have land that may want to be bought. I was talking to a person that I know in Pittsburgh, and they said, you know, if public service came up to me and offered me that kind of money, I would have to seriously consider it because, you know, we've worked the land for a lot of years trying to make a living. We're making a living, but not a great living.
Mm-hmm.
This money that they're offering could really set our family secure for generations. And I think that has fueled some anger, additional anger, that there's a sense that public service is taking advantage of people who are facing economic tough times and offering them large amounts of money. And I think there was, Northern Utilities, which is the Northeast Utilities, which is the parent company, at their recent investors meeting indicated that they expected to announce the new route, which has been delayed for a year over this issue of land purchases, maybe in August, expect to be able to go forward and submit their application to the Department of Energy. So there's a sense out there that they're nearing completion of the purchases that they need to go forward with the line. And I know that Martin Murray is going to be on later in the show, and it would be interesting to see if he's willing to talk about where they are and on their schedule. Right. Originally, I believe they anticipated submitting this application over a year ago.
Yeah, I think the last time we talked about it, we talked about it in November, actually, and I think I remember saying we expect to hear by the end of the year, and clearly that didn't happen. So we will
push back.
We will talk after a short break. And as you said, Barbara, we will have Martin Murray from PSNH on with us. And we'll take your calls as well. The number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And we'll be back in a minute.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on what's next for Northern Pass on the Exchange on NHPR, and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Greek elections and the future of the Eurozone. New Hampshire weather today turning partly to mostly sunny for most of the state. Some clouds may linger along the seacoast. Highs today 70 to 75 degrees. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, mix of clouds and sunshine, highs 70 to 75 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Neve Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from Novus Engineering, an employee-owned company with a 23-year legacy of collaboration, responsiveness, and community involvement. Information at novusengineering.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're getting the latest on the Northern Pass project, and let's get your thoughts. Call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. This hour, we have two North Country reporters who've been following this issue, Barbara Tatro, reporter for the Berlin Daily Sun, and Edith Tucker with the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter. And joining us now on the phone is Martin Murray. He's media representative for Public Service of New Hampshire and the Northern Pass Energy Project. And Martin, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Laura. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, we were just talking before we took a break about where this process is now. Couple times there have been announcements that the final line will be announced by such and such a date and then not to be. So when can we expect, Martin, to know where this thing is slated to go from A to Z?
Yeah, there's been one official time change, one amendment to our application in terms of our expected in-service date, and it's now, as you know, late 2016. And that delay was sought because we did decide to go back to the drawing board in the North Country, and we expected a delay of at least 9 months. We have not officially changed the in-service date, but obviously it's taken more than 9 months. We've made terrific progress in our mind, and we're getting closer to the goal, but we don't have an official time change at this point, Laura. So we have not talked about when we expect to amend the application. But I can tell you that, as I said, we're getting closer. We've made good progress, and at some point we will make that amendment. But we've made no official announcement in terms of when that filing will be.
And the filing means the line itself will be revealed, Martin. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we'll make a proposal as we did with the initial 40-mile route, Laura. That's a proposal. It's not an end game, but that was our proposal for where the route should be. What we said in April of last year was, okay, we're going back to the drawing board based on what we heard from the North Country, and we're going to identify another route to propose. Now, when we propose that new route, that will be done as part of an amendment of our application at the Department of Energy.
The Federal Department of Energy. They're the ones that have to okay this first, is that right?
Correct. There's a federal process for a permit to cross the border. It's been assigned to the Department of Energy. As part of that process, what they decided to do was to have an environmental impact statement required. And that's a very public process. It included a number of public meetings up and down the route. And what would happen, Laura, is let's say hypothetically in September we amend our application and announce a new proposed route. What the DOE would do at that time is they would keep the public comment period open for at least 45 days, and they would include at least one, or actually I think it's two public meetings again in that area in the North Country where we would be proposing a new route. So there'd be additional opportunity for public comment written, but also at least two meetings that the DOE would hold.
You know, I want to ask you, Martin, about a new study released last week or the week before from the New England Power Generators Association, which says, given remarkably low natural gas prices, Northern Pass's original estimate of how much customers could save are no longer accurate. You've disputed the study, saying that, look, the association is a direct competitor, so take it with a huge grain of salt, and I understand that. But what about the basic premise, Martin, that these rock-bottom natural gas prices are a game changer for energy markets and possibly a game changer for this project?
Well, as you know, in order for the project to be successful, the energy would have to be economic. In other words, we build the line. We provide to Hydro-Québec the right to transmit energy along the line. They would put it into the New England marketplace. The only way to sell that product into the market is if it is economic. Hydro-Québec and Northern Pass, for that matter, fully expect that this product, this energy, will be delivered into the market at savings. So it will be sold on the market. It will produce savings for customers. Now, this group that says they haven't yet actually taken a position on the project obviously is trying to, you know, give us a kick in the shins there and make us look bad. But the fact is that we expect that this project is going to be very successful. It's going to significantly reduce emissions of carbon, and it's going to save hundreds of millions of dollars for customers. I guess one thing I would point out is recall that we're talking about not just 5 years or 10 years, but 40 years in service for this line. And no one can tell you, Laura, what it's going to cost to fill up your gas tank a year from now, let alone what the price of natural gas is going to be in the New England marketplace 5, 10, or 40 years down the road. One additional thought, though. As part of the state permitting process, which has not yet begun, we would file a new impact statement detailing, based on current prices at that time, how much savings there would be to customers and how much tons of carbon would be reduced as a result of this line. So that would be a new filing that we would be required to produce as part of the state permitting process.
Well, and Martin, I want to let you know, I got several detailed emails this morning before the show began, people who really wanted to submit their questions to you. I want to thank all of them for emailing. These emails are very long, so I cannot read all of them on the air, but there's a couple points that come up again and again that I do want to share with you. Best outlined perhaps by Peter in Plymouth, who says, Hydro-Québec's own subsidiary, TransEnergy, stated in 2004 testimony that undergrounding, that means putting the lines underground instead of up on towers, is a mature technology that can equal the cost of overhead power lines because Even though the initial costs may be less for overhead, the long-term costs favor undergrounding because there is less maintenance and no storm damage costs. Martin, I know you and I have talked about this before, but what about that? And I want to acknowledge also Nancy in Sugar Hill, who said also that undergrounding is viable. They're doing it in Vermont, Maine, New York. Technology, she says, marketed and installed by Hydro-Quebec itself. So what about that, Martin? We've gotten lots of concern that you could put it underground and then it wouldn't disrupt the landscape.
Well, two things. When we start to hear these concerns and people claiming that Hydro-Quebec is for underground, we asked Hydro-Quebec about it and went to their website. And what they're talking about in terms of their material is the distribution system, not the transmission system. There is no underground transmission system in Quebec, but they are endeavoring, where it makes sense, to put, especially in new developments, to put power lines underground. That happens as well here in New Hampshire, as you know, Laura. If a developer wants to pay the cost above and beyond what the overhead would cost, they can put distribution power systems underground to new developments. That happens quite a bit. Now, the second part, though, is, set that aside. What about putting the line underground? And I'll repeat what we've said for some time. With the old traditional technology, we believe, and I really don't think there's any dispute about this, it's incredibly impactful. Not only is it 10 to 15 times more expensive, but the amount of impact on the environment, on our landscape here in New Hampshire, would just be tremendous. Now, there is new technology, new underground technology, that is less impactful that people are talking about. It has not yet gotten to the point where it is viable. It has never been used for a project of this size in terms of the amount of energy being transmitted over the line. Will that change in the years to come? It could be, and we've promised to keep looking and keep studying that technology. So we basically said there's no way that the traditional underground technology makes any sense for this project here in New Hampshire. On the new technology, we will keep an open mind. We will keep looking. But at the same time, we are moving ahead with this project. It simply makes sense for a project that is this beneficial to New Hampshire and the rest of New England to move forward in the proper permitting process and to get a fair appraisal.
These people are unconvinced, Martin. They say the only reason that you don't want to do it underground is because you want to get the rental fees for the easement. I've got a couple people making that accusation, and they're absolutely unconvinced by those arguments. They feel like the technology is here and now and that you're not looking at the costs in the face.
Well, I'm not sure what they're talking about, rental fees. If PSNH's rights of way are being used by Northern Pass for their structures, the cost that Northern Pass would pay to PSNH would go in our books as reduced cost to our customers. I mean, that's what would happen to that money. It would reduce costs that customers would otherwise pay. Again, in terms of underground technology, we simply look at it, Laura, purely as does it make sense? Does it make sense from an engineering, from an environmental perspective, from an economic perspective? And it doesn't. At some point, you simply have to look at the dollars and cents for sure, and you say, well, are we going to move ahead with this project if it doesn't save customers money? Now, as we have envisioned it, this project is going to save New Hampshire and New England customers hundreds of millions of dollars a year. If we move forward with it in the manner that we've envisioned.
Well, and again, I want to thank those two people for emailing. And I got a lot of questions, too, from Susan in Easton. And Susan, thank you so much also. I can't read all your questions, but there are one or two that she raises that have come up in other conversations as well, Martin. Here's one huge one for folks in the North Country. If Northern Pass truly believes that overhead towers will have little to no effect on property values when common sense and the appraisal industry disagrees. It's a great point. It's hard to understand how someone's property value couldn't be degraded by a tower in the backyard.
Well, the best way to answer that question, I guess, is to look at appraisals that have been done, Laura. And we have on the project website a study that was done for the project right here in New Hampshire. And what it did was it looked at sales of properties along existing high-voltage lines in Deerfield and in Lancaster, and it found no significant impact in terms of the sales of properties in those two towns. There's been quite a bit of other study as well. We have a lot of that material on the project website, and there is a difference of opinion, as you point out. There are some people that simply don't accept the facts that we presented, and we're just going to have to continue to do the best job that we can, providing information, trying to correct misunderstandings. But, you know, at some point, there are some people who may never agree with us and may dispute that. But nevertheless, that's the information that we're basing our work on.
Here's another question. This is about those 40 miles that everybody keeps focusing on, you know, from the Canadian border, where you don't yet have the right-of-way, and that's what all the land purchases are about that we've been talking about. Susan also points out how Northern Pass can say it will use PSNH's, quote, existing right-of-way for the lower 140 miles. She says it does not have right-of-way through the White Mountain National Forest, for one. It's a good point, and I had read that elsewhere. Do you have right-of-way through the White Mountain National Forest?
We have a special use permit. It belongs to the National Forest, not to PSNH, but there are existing transmission lines now through the White Mountain National Forest, Laura, that deliver power up from the south to the north to help power people's homes and people's businesses in the North Country. That has existed for decades. We've asked for a modification of that permit in order to allow an additional line. There will be no additional widening of the right-of-way that does exist. So the answer is there is a right-of-way there now. The land itself belongs to the National Forest. We do have a permit to use it, and we are using it and have for decades.
Well, and again, Susan and Nancy and Peter, I want to thank you for sharing all those questions with us, and I apologize for not being able to get to all of them. I have one last question for you, Martin, and then I'll let you go. You know, you guys at PSNH have been working very hard and spending lots of money to get the property needed for this new alternate route. But as you said, still subject to federal approval, state approval, and so forth. How does it work under that uncertainty that even if you spend millions of dollars for land, you might not get the final okay from the authorities? Then have you just wasted your money? I'm just curious how that works.
Well, we haven't taken it to that point, Laura. We're very confident in the opportunity that we have and New England has in terms of this line, so we're very excited about the possibility. But, you know, you raise an interesting point. I mean, hypothetically, what would happen? I guess we would own some nice property, you know, in the North Country, but we're not getting to that point of what do we do with that land if the project doesn't go forward. We do expect the project to go forward and to be very successful.
All right. Well, Martin, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
That's Martin Murray, media representative for PSNH and the Northern Pass Energy Project. You can join us with your questions, comments, concerns at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, our reporters joining us for the hour who've been covering this issue for a long time, Barbara Tatro with the Berlin Daily Sun and Edith Tucker with the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter. And I think to you first, Barbara, you looked at this debate over undergrounding, and many of our emails said, hey, come on, why can't you put this stuff underground? And PSNH, as we heard, has repeatedly said, you can't. You just can't do it at this point. How do you sort that out, Barbara? How do you find out which is true?
Well, I did look up, you know, on Google online to look, and I know that there is a project, I believe, in Maine that's talking about it. But as Martin said, it hasn't been done yet. It's proposed, so you know, I guess I have to take him at his word, because if he wasn't telling the truth, I'm sure someone would let us know. But I was wondering, you know, he talked about it sort of in a, you know, bury the entire line, and I have not heard any discussion about the possibility of maybe selecting sections that are the most scenic and maybe burying portions of the 40-mile new line that are particularly that you particularly want to save those view sheds.
So we're not talking about,
I would
yeah.
just,
Go ahead, Barbara.
I would suspect on the entire 40 miles that there are sections that are not particularly pristine. And, you know, is there room for a compromise? And it does seem that if you could bury that line, you would eliminate some of the opposition. I noted that I believe some of the towns, Stewartstown, for example, passed at their town meeting a town ordinance that said that any large-scale transmission route through that town had to be buried. So, you know, maybe if there was some look at, I think burying the line would eliminate some of the opposition, and maybe there needs to be a look at, can we do at least sections of it, and how environmentally evasive is the process of digging trenches? I mean, they buried the natural gas, Portland natural gas transmission line. That was in the 90s, and that went through the entire North Country. And I know there were some wetlands issues at times, but it happened, and now, you know, it doesn't seem to be an issue.
Well, and you raised something that I wanted to ask you both about, so I'll turn to you, Edith. Barbara raised the magic word compromise. Given, you know, how upset people are and how passionately they feel and how committed to this project PSNH is there any room for compromise, Edith? Or is this, if this goes through, is it going to have to be rammed through?
Well, I'm interested in the fact that the spokespeople for the Society of Protection of New Hampshire Forests are not as persuaded as Mr. Murray is that the project will take place, that they will assemble the route. Apparently, they are talking with landowners on parcels that appear to them to be in line for the route, and they're not at all convinced that it's a go. But the compromise, I think, would not just have to be in the 40 miles. A tremendous amount of effort is being spent in Easton, Sugar Hill, that area. People are very upset there, too, with an existing right-of-way.
Okay, and I'll cut you off there for just a minute, Edith. We will be back after a short break. We'll take your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477.
Ginger Lever is with UNH Manchester, an NHPR underwriter.
Supporting NHPR is very effective for any kind of organization that wants to connect with an audience because people listen. If you go into restaurants or walking by people's cars in the parking lot, you can hear it. And that's a measure and a testimony to the fact that people are listening.
For more information about becoming an NHPR underwriter, visit the business support page on nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Granite State College Master of Science in Leadership. Relevant across many industries, degrees can be earned with as few as 10 courses. Online at granite.edu/NHPR. And Gibson's Bookstore in Concord welcoming New Hampshire author Nancy Bergeron June 21st at 7, discussing Restoring the Postmaster's Cottage, One Year's Journey. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the Northern Pass debate continues. We've been looking at some of the latest iterations in this long story about this giant hydropower project that would start in Quebec, go down through New Hampshire, and end up on the New England grid. Our number here in The Exchange for you to join us with your questions, comments, concerns is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We have two reporters with us for the hour, both from the North Country, Barbara Tatro with the Berlin Daily Sun and Edith Tucker with the Coos County Democrat. And joining us now is Charlie Jordan. He's editor of the Colebrook Chronicle. And Charlie, welcome. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Laura. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. And let's just say up front, Charlie, that on this issue, you decided to leave that impartial journalism aside and become a staunch opponent of this project.
Exactly. I think I only tip my hat to Barbara there as far as having covered the North Country less than done. You know, she's been doing 40 years. I've been doing about 38 years. And I have never seen anything that is so much of a no-brainer as this project when it first came along. So we felt it stood in the way of everything and every reason that the North Country exists and why people live here. So I had to take a stand on it.
Because of the impact on the landscape and so forth.
Well, so much, you know, so many different factors. You can come into this, and people do from so many different doors. I mean, I've never seen so many different people come together that are normally throttling each other at town meeting day. You know, because it impacts the very core of what the North Country is. And, you know, we had the original proposal that was made about a year or so ago. And Governor Lynch got the message, I think, and he told Northern Pass, go back. I'm not going to support this unless you get the support of the North Country. So Martin's right. They went back to the drawing board. But how did they handle it? They opened their checkbook instead of sitting down and listening to the people of the North Country, talking to them. And so we really don't know, except for reporters like ourselves who are trying to piece together what their latest strategy is. And it's very disconcerting.
You know, just stepping back, Charlie, we've done a lot of reporting on this show on alternative energy, anything from, you know, windmills to solar projects to biomass to you name it, nuclear. And I have to ask you about a term that has come out in the last few years, and that's called green NIMBYism, where you say, yeah, I'm all over alternative energy. Yeah, I want to get the nation off fossil fuels, but please don't do it in my backyard. What do you think about that critique overall, and does it apply in the case of the Northern Pass? You know, you guys want the alternative energy, but you don't want to have to deal with the effects of it.
There's individuals all over the North Country who are already practicing conservation. There's solar panels. There are small wind projects. These are not the problems. So where we look at this, and I guess the biggest problem is we've learned so much as a region about alternative energy, and how this resource is gathered above the border is a real eye opener. So I don't think there's anyone in the North Country that says conservation is not a good thing. But I would follow the line all the way down to the other end and start conservation down there in Connecticut, in Massachusetts, in New York. They should be looking at their energy consumption. Why should we scar the North Country so that somebody could plug in five more lights in Hartford?
You questioning that hydro is even green?
This particular hydro, I mean, hydro, there's a lot of small hydro projects through the North Country and through the state of New Hampshire, and I do think that some of those will be jeopardized by this. They use existing waterways, just as the lumber industry used the existing waterways at one point. What they're doing up north is they're clearing out large tracts and relocating people in Quebec. Remember, this is a government-owned company, Hydro Quebec is. So people are being displaced. We're innocently down here saying, oh, this must be really good. So we're learning an awful lot, but I think the North Country has been at the cutting edge of conservation. So we're not ready to take that rap.
Well, renewable power, I think, is in the state government's renewable portfolio standard. So I think the governor and the state are on paper anyway saying, yeah, hydro counts as green.
The thing is, again, how hydro is achieved. I mean, you can say manufacturing is great, but if it's a sweatshop in China versus, you know, something that's hiring people here, I mean, you have different ways you get to an end product. So, but I think the key thing is you have to also balance what are we in the North Country. And I think that, you know, when we're told tourism is our future, and we only have three routes up here in this 40-mile area. We have Route 26, Route 145, and Route 3. And this project, no matter where Northern Pass moves it, is going to cross those highways. So if you're doing a 45-minute drive through the North Country, you're going to see these towers three times. And you have every right, if you've taken a day drive up from Merrimack, to say, what's with the North Country here? This has changed. And so these are the things I think we're trying to protect.
You know, I wonder, too, about the economy, Charlie, and you know this better than anybody. You know, the economy of the North Country has been hard hit over the last decade or so. What about the economic benefits, either in the form of lower electric rates? Businesses we talk to say electric rates are a huge, huge concern for them. What about the short-term jobs that could come with construction, the long-term jobs in terms of maintaining this system? I mean, are you, you know, saying no to a giant jobs project?
Well, it's not really a giant jobs project. It's a, you know, I don't think nostalgically back to the 1990s when they put the pipeline as the big boom of the North Country, you know, through here. It's a temporary job situation. I do think that people are becoming wealthy, and those are the people, unfortunately, who have sold to Northern Pass. And, you know, some people are ridiculous prices. I mean, millions of dollars for a few acres here and there. And again, I find that as part of the whole insult of this project is that they can buy their way through instead of sitting down, listening to the people and saying, okay, this is the answer to that, and trying to sell the concept instead of buy their way through, which is exactly where we are.
Well, and Charlie, I'll let you go because we've got some callers that I want to get
sure,
on the line,
yeah.
And I really appreciate you taking the time with us this morning.
Well, it's great to hear you, Laura.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
That's Charlie Jordan. Again, as I said, he's editor of the Colebrook Chronicle, which has taken a stand against the Northern Pass Project. The number for you to join us on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And Barbara and Edith, let's go to our callers now. Paul's been waiting in Bow. Hey, Paul, thanks for hanging on. I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Sure. I am consider myself to be an environmentalist. I live in Bow, and I like living out in the woods. I also electricity. I don't understand the tremendous resistance to this project. I don't think that the fact that there are power lines makes a forest not a forest anymore. If they were, you know, if that's all there was, that would be one thing. But I just, it seems to me with the employment situation and with the need for power, people live in these.
Oh, Paul, I'm so sorry. Your phone is just blipping in and out on us. But I think I got the gist of what you were saying. Seems to me, Edith, he's saying, look, you know, he doesn't understand the resistance to this project. Power lines don't mean that the forest is no longer there. And given the concerns over the North Country economy, you know, why are people so upset? Paul, again, I'm sorry to hang up on you there, but we were starting to lose you. Go ahead, Edith.
Well, I think the height of the towers is a concern. You have to remember that all the way from parts of Pittsburgh north to the Canadian border, you don't see any power lines at all. The new border station at Pittsburgh is powered by Canadian electricity. There is no power line. So this is really quite a big change. And the towers, apparently, on that first 40 miles would ordinarily be 85 feet tall. In Lancaster, Northumberland, that area, Whitefield, which I cover, the website says they would be 115 feet tall. And that is tall. The first tower on the at Cannon Mountain is 93 feet tall, but you don't really see it because there's a backdrop of the hill. People are used to having things the way they are. Things don't change rapidly in the North Country. And so that kind of a change does make people unhappy. And I think it was the landscape that first made people unhappy. Since then, they've become concerned about where the, you know, the flooding of native lands in Quebec, sort of a comparable to the Alberta tar sands. They're concerned of what's going to happen to the environment in Canada by various projects. Fracking concerns people. The whole energy issues of whether it's from the Middle East, whether it's from deep sea drilling, Gulf drilling, energy is fraught with terrible problems in the environment. And this seemed to be bringing one right here to the North Country where things don't change rapidly.
Well, Paul,
but
thank
Barbara
you.
Barbara may have a different view.
I want to invite actually another caller in, and this is Sue in New Hampton. Hi, Sue. Thank you for waiting as well. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. My question relates to the southern part of the route, because it seems like it's being presented as if the 40 miles in the north are approved, the route is set. And in central New Hampshire, where I live close to the route, there's a lot of opposition. And my understanding is that there are parts of the existing right-of-way that have height restrictions, and similar to what was just being talked about, where towers that high cannot be put. And there are also areas where the existing right-of-way isn't wide enough for what would be needed. So what needs to happen in that area is important as well.
No, Sue, this is a great point. And I want to let you know that we did focus on this sort of mid-route questions the last time we talked about Northern Pass in October or November of 2011. But it's a great point. And Barbara, I know you're based in the North Country. Have you been looking at this issue, though, of, you know, the middle of the route? We have read reports from the Concord Monitor that people who are along the route in central New Hampshire have concerns because the right of way, yes, it's already there, but it will need to be widened, for example.
I have, and I know that at the scoping hearings that they had, there was a considerable amount of opposition in Plymouth and those areas. And I also had some discussions when I was writing the article for New Hampshire Business Magazine with Jack Savage at the Forest Society, and he questions that right-of-way that they're using through the National Forest was used to bring in electricity to their region. And he's questioning whether that can be used for what is basically a private enterprise, a private project. Can they use that line to in effect make money off of? And he indicated that the Forest Society was having its attorneys look at that issue, and I suspect that's an area that they'll seek to, if not litigate, at least raise that in the permitting process when it goes forward with the Forest Service and the Department of Energy.
Well, and Sue, it's a good question, one we've looked at before and will look at again. This hour we were focusing on some of the developments in the North Country, but again, a very good question. And Barbara, you mentioned your article in New Hampshire Business Magazine. I want to let everyone know that that's available on our website, nhpr.org, if you want to get a hold of that. Again, Barbara, taking a comprehensive look at this project. A couple more emails I'd love to get to with both of you before we close out the program. Here's one from Ed in Keene, who says, I believe the statement that landowners are being, quote, taken advantage of by multimillion-dollar offers for their land reveals a misunderstanding about the reality of life of many New Hampshire families, particularly in this economy. Ed says, for many, these sales mean a secure retirement, college education for their children, many other opportunities. Ed says, there are many reasons to oppose the project, but the fact that Northern Pass is offering some New Hampshire families a brighter future is not one of them. What do you think about that, Edith?
Well, I think that is... it's hard to know how to deal with that issue. Yes, people, when they're offered money for their homes, their land, their way of life, it's a very difficult decision. Right now, according to statistics that are nationwide, county by county, one-third of the money that is generated, that comes into and is spent in Coos County, comes from the federal government. And that's a dramatic change from 10 years ago and 20 years ago. The economy here has hollowed out for many people, and it's a terribly tough decision for people to make. Yes, there are people who are hurting, towns that have never had very many children on free and reduced lunch program. Now, Jefferson, for example, over half the children at the Jefferson School qualify for free and reduced lunch. This is very, very different. The closing of the mills has changed the economy in the North Country, and it's a tough thing for people. So I understand what it means, you know, for people to have capital offered them, and that kind of money we're talking about, it's capital.
It's significant, not millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask both of you another question. Barbara, I think I'll give it to you. This has become an international issue, too. As I understand, officials in the town of Stewartstown and Campton wrote letters to Hydro-Québec, to Canada's premier, saying, look, this is going to hurt our relations with you. Have they gotten any response from the officials in Canada, as far as you know, Barbara?
No, not that I'm aware of. And I did read, some articles in the Montreal Gazette talking about, you know, Hydro-Québec is actively pursuing exporting its energy, and it's continuing to expand Hydro-Québec. to do these types of sales, and with the Canadian dollar and the higher now and the drop in natural gas prices, they're looking to increase the volume to keep their profit levels up.
Yeah, it's a national goal to continue exporting energy, from what I understand.
And I know that there is some opposition among the Canadian, some of the Canadian areas that have been impacted, but I haven't seen a lot in the Canadian press, but I'll be honest and say that I'm not as familiar with the reaction up in Canada.
Right. Well, you got your hands full, Barbara, very much reporting on this. Edith Tucker, super short, I heard you wanting to jump in there.
Well, I think that we need to remember that when conservation monies were offered, people like John Amy in Pittsburgh, there was criticism in town for his taking that years ago, the predecessor to LCHIP, that he was, by selling the development rights, he was hurting the future of his family. He felt otherwise. He felt he was securing their future. But these issues are not new.
All right. I will end it at that. Edith, thank you so much. A lot more to talk about, but we'll close it out now. Thank you for being with us, Edith.
Thank you.
That's Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter. Barbara Tatro, thank you also for taking the time this morning. That's Barbara Tatro, reporter for the Berlin Daily Sun newspaper. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Canoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, a panel of State House leaders joins us on the legislative year 2012. We'll hear from top members of the State House and State Senate about their biggest accomplishments and disappointments this session. And we'll get their thoughts on how what happened at the State House this year will affect what happens at the ballot box this fall. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Antioch University New England in Keene, offering master's programs in counseling, marriage and family therapy, and dance movement therapy. AntiochNE.edu. And the Monadnock Senior Celebration Expo, providing information on local resources and services for seniors, Wednesday, June 27th at South Meadow School in Peterborough, 620-1527.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 1.